Bustin' Loose Baseball,
hosted by Grant Paulson
and Toby Altizer,
gives you in-depth
analytics
and interviews on everything baseball in the nation's capital.
Now, here's your host, Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer.
This is turning into a beefy BLD, but I think that's fine because we didn't give people the F earlier in the week. But I want to hit on a couple of things still here. We're going to get to a few players in the minor league system that had some strong showings this week. I've got a thought on the top of the draft board. I want to bounce off you and get your thoughts. And then we will give you a quick preview of the Cubs series as well, all coming up here on episode 184 of Bustin' Loose Baseball. So let's start in the system. Toby, we got to talk about Travis Acora again. We're reaching, I don't know what to call it, but like holy shnikes territory with this guy. Sound the sirens. You know, this is getting ridiculous. He's 21 years old, 6'6", 232. Everything's out of central casting. You know, he's touched 100 in the minor leagues. Hasn't done it this year coming back from the hip, but he's been up to 98, 99. Mostly, I think he's averaging 96 with his fastball right now. It's six starts in. It's only 19 innings because they were very careful with him after the hip procedure. First couple outings, but he's starting to stretch out. But listen to these numbers, dude. 19 innings, okay? So just quick math says that he's retired 57 batters, right? He's allowed four hits. Four hits. 57 batters retired. He's got 38 strikeouts, and he's allowed four hits. That is almost a 10-to-1 strikeout-to-hit-allowed ratio. Like, this does not happen in professional baseball. Now, the caveat I'll provide is that, yes, he was, for at least the beginning of this time, his first three starts and eight innings were... No, it was actually only two outings. So only five innings were in the FCL and rookie ball. So the last 14 of these innings have now been in a plus ball. But this is a 21-year-old who's not as experienced as a guy that age. He only pitched at single A last year at Fredericksburg, never got bumped up. So this is his first sample now in A+, which is a pretty gigantic leap. I mean, you could make the case, you know, that's for a pitcher going from single A last year to A+, a couple weeks after being in the FCL is about as big a leap as you're going to make. And he has now pitched his last two outings, four innings of one-hit ball with 15 strikeouts in back-to-back starts here. I don't know, man. I mean, he is – here's what I'll say succinctly. He has become a top-five right-handed pitching prospect in the sport as we sit here and talk today, and I don't think that's debatable. With Chase Dolander in the big leagues in Colorado, Rhett Lauder having graduated to Cincinnati, he's banged up. Cade Horton, former Oklahoma star with the Cubs, who we're going to see at Nats Park, hopefully, this turn through. Right now, you've got Bubba Chandler with the Pirates, who's ridiculous. Andrew Painter, who could hit 100 with the Phillies, who's in the division, who's nasty. And who else that are definitively ahead of this guy on a right-handed pitcher in the minor leagues chart? I think it's pretty few and far between. Acora looks like a legitimate number one. And that's that. I am so excited about him, and I hope people get a chance to watch him. It's now must-see TV for me. If he's pitching while the Nats are playing, you know, I've got the minor league game up side by side. Like, he's just – this is the best arm they've had in terms of upside in their system since Strasburg, with no debate, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, his career whip now is .83. Last year, a .91 all in A-ball. This year, like you said, three different levels. Rookie ball for a couple, just rehabbing back in A-ball for a little bit, and then up to high A. He has been spectacular because, like you said, that's a jump going to high A, and he's still been dominant up there. You know, the only reason, you know, you're going to give him some time, but and part of the reason you still need to build him up, you need him to get five, you need him to get six innings, but this is an ace-type pitcher that you're looking at, a guy that can truly be a number one, number two-type starter, and he's got everything you want. He's got, you know, he can think on his own. He's someone that understands his body. He's someone that understands his repertoire, and he's going to continue to get better and better, and he is just dominating the lower levels of the minor leagues. And I can't wait to see him whenever that debut comes. It's not going to be this year, obviously, and maybe not till the end of next year. But you're looking at someone that, like you were saying, is a top five right-handed pitcher in all of baseball, where he's becoming a real problem for other teams that he's facing. And he's going to become a huge asset for the Nationals. Like we were talking about potential trade targets, if there were guys that became available, if this team were hovering around 500 at the trade deadline, there's only one untouchable in the system for me, and it's Travis Sikora, because he looks like a true ace. And the way that he continues to go out there time after time, now you just need to see him get a little length this year, because the dominance has been there once again. He's been even better than he was last season when he struck out 129 over 85 innings. Now he's doing it high A. Just I can't wait to see him continue to rocket through the minor league, because the numbers are just stupid. Every time he takes the hill, it's just ridiculous to see what he does.
Yeah, I totally get the thinking on when you say, is he an untouchable? Because I'm starting to get into that mode where, my God, would it be hard to trade him? Now, we've talked about this, my philosophy. I don't have such a thing as like pitchers that are untouchable. I guess there's exceptions to every rule, like Paul Skenes and Strasburg or whatever. I mean, but even right now, the big debate is should the Pirates trade
Yeah.
Paul Skenes, right? But high school arms, especially prep right-handers, arms, the guys that throw like him, you almost bake in like a year and a half at some point where you don't have them. And for that reason, like bats are just more valuable. But damn, I mean, I would need a stud back. I was texting with a couple of buddies this week just about different like Sikora deals that I would even accept at this point. And someone threw something at me with like a couple of pretty good little big leaguers that are young, controllable players. And I was like, no, because there's not a star, like neither of those guys is going to be an all-star type player. Like I would need a 30 home run, 100 RBI type bat back for control for a couple of years to even consider as a centerpiece of a deal with other stuff to even consider it right now. Like that's where we're at with Sikora. He's just ridiculous. Another, really high ceiling arm in the system. And this is a much more normal pitching prospect, not like a can't miss guy. But when Alex Clemmie's on, dude, he is filthy. 19 years old. You and I saw him in that, what do they call it, the prospect breakout game,
Yeah, spring breakout.
spring breakout. So that night, I thought he was electric. Like his stuff was absurd. He's through 45 innings, 31 strikeouts, and 67. Excuse me, through 45 innings, 31 hits allowed and 67 strikeouts, pitching in A plus as well. He's been in Wilmington for the full year. He's got a 3.1 ERA in 11 starts and a 1.91 average against. I mean, those are really, really impressive totals. Now, the concern with him is the walks. And so he pitched today as we talk on Sunday. And this line is kind of what you get in Clemmie. It's 5 innings, 3 hits, no runs. It's 9 strikeouts, but he did walk 5 batters. And so it's DJ Hirsch-ish early in his career. And what I mean by that is nobody ever hits this guy. Like they just don't. But there are plenty of games where he walks several guys. And because of that, either can't go deep into a game or he gives up just a couple of hits, but it's more runs and the ERA is a little higher than it should be for a guy who this year has a 200 batting average against, just as an example, over his last 10 starts. But like he had a 6-inning, 2-hit shutout outing with 9 Ks. Going back to the end of May, 2 starts ago, 6-inning outing in the minors where he had 2 hits. Clemmie's the real deal, man. Now, his consistency is a question, but just as an example, he's another guy we're talking about where he's like, what is he ranked? Fifth, sixth, seventh in the system, depending on the publication you're looking at. And there's a real chance he could be a legitimate mid-rotation type starter if things work out and you dream on that a little bit.
Yeah, I think, when you watch him, he does look a little DJ Hirsch-ish. And actually, you look at some of the numbers and you can see it a little bit. So last year, before he got called up in AAA, DJ Hirsch made 10 starts and he walked 7.3 per nine, which is horrible. Struck out 10 per nine. But then he came to the bigs and his walks were cut in half, 3.7 per nine. About the same strikeout rate, a little bit higher, 10.8. You look at this year for Clemmie, 7.3, which is identical to what Hers had at AAA last year, walks per nine, 12.8 Ks per nine. Like, I think for whatever reason, it seems like for the Nationals, the last couple of years, they've had a couple of guys Parker's kind of gotten back to that realm, but remember at times Parker's been good where he's been able to limit the walks. The walks were an issue when he came up. Remember Irvin? That was something we talked about, never to the extent of some of these guys, but you was discussed about, is he going to be able to not walk guys? And he's obviously improved on that in his big league career. So to me, when you look at the stuff that he has, we've heard people compare him in terms of mechanics, and you got a lanky lefty kind of throwing from that side, looking a little haterish in the way that he can be. And we've seen how dominant he's been as a reliever throughout his career, former starter that didn't work out there, but turned into one of the most dominant relievers in the bigs over the last decade. I mean, you look at what he's got, the stuff that he's got, and I think he can be a really, really good player for this team, and someone that, you know, if you want to look down the road and look into the future and say that people, they're not going to be able to sign the big-time guys, you know, maybe you've got guys that can replace people in the rotation going forward, with a Travis Sikora being your ace and Alex Clemmie being maybe a kind of like a nasty three that at any point could go six innings and strike out 12, or, you know, maybe he blows up from time to time and struggles and walks the yard. But he's someone that is just so nasty that I'm excited to see how he continues to go. The big thing, like you said, is the walks. That's the main thing that he's got to work on. But no one hits this guy, and it's been consistent now over time in high A. The ERA is just slightly over three. So the main thing, you cut down the walks. The stuff is so nasty. But sometimes you get these types of pitchers, Grant, and walks are always going to be a thing with them, but the stuff is so nasty you can put up with it. You just need it to be manageable. That's the main thing for him. Get it to that manageable number.
Yeah, and here's the trick, right, is that we're looking at what it could turn into if everything goes well. The flip side is he could be a reliever in a couple of years too. I mean, that's where pitching prospects, it's a risky business. And to that point, like DJ Hurz, how much is he helping right now? Now, I'm not knocking him. He's having Tommy John, and he's out for a year. But you're talking about basically two seasons where you lose just being able to use that guy like you'd like to, essentially, because the next year it's kid gloves and a bunch of restrictions and rules and building them back up. All right, we'll keep it short here with one more player in the system to hit on. I'm going to step to the side because he's your guy. I don't want to say I'd gotten down on him, but I think you've always and right now, I would say correctly so, just stayed very high on Brady House, who's got 10 homers. He's hitting almost 300 at AAA. This has been a really impressive year at Rochester. 860 ops, had two doubles today. He looks like he's closing in on being ready, Toby.
Yeah, I mean, he was someone that kind of disappointed last year when you look at the numbers overall. In 2023, he had his OPS up to 862 among three levels, A-ball, high A, and then double A to finish the year. Last year, it was a disappointment. OPS dropped below 700 for the season between double A and triple A. But this year, now repeating triple A for a second year, 292 average, 350 on base. Like, he looks like someone that you can depend on. And I think he's someone that, frankly, we should see pretty soon, because he's doing everything you need. We've already talked about before defensively. You know, I don't think he's a plus defender at third base, but I think he gives you good defense. Like, I don't think he's great. I don't think he's any, you know, gold glove caliber, but I think, frankly, if he came up right now, he'd be your best option at third base since Paul DeJong is injured. I think he'd be your best defensive third baseman. And on top of that, you know, we were talking about the power that this lineup has, and you know, they're not spending money to improve the power in free agency. James Woods provided some of that, and I think the other guy that they were frankly planning on showing some of that power and providing it through the minor league system was Brady House. His slugging percentage this year, 509, and the 10 homers, five of them in the month of May. He looked like someone that has now kind of understood that level and starting to turn that corner. And high school guy coming out, it's taken a little bit of time, but 21 years old, I think he's going to make his debut here soon. And I think he's going to give this lineup a little more power, like we were talking about. Also, gives you another right-handed bat. I mean, it was crazy seeing what they did in Seattle. Charlie and David said on the broadcast, the radio broadcast on The Fan, that the Mariners, in however long their history was, don't quote me on this stat, but I'm pretty sure it was close to what they were saying, in the history of their franchise, had only twice before the National Series faced an entire left-handed hitting lineup, or whether it was all lefties or switch hitters. And they did it all three times against the Nationals in that series. They're lacking right-handed bats that they trust right now. And so getting a Brady House to this level could probably help you out. Someone that maybe isn't going to hit right now, 2, 3, 4, or anything like that, but gives you another right-handed bat that can hit for some power, can help you defensively. Frankly, you know, I would love for him to be playing third base for this team on Tuesday when they win against the Cubs. I don't think that's going to happen, but at this point, Grant, it can be any home game because I think they'd want to bring him up at home because he's at least known enough a little bit. Like we talked about this with Cruz, we talked about this with Wood last year. I think they want to bring these guys up at home. But basically, any time they're at home, wouldn't be surprising at all if Brady House is making his debut over the next month or so, because I think they could use his bat in the lineup, and I think they could use his glove as well.
Toby Altizer, Grant Paulson, busting loose baseball. All right, quickly just wanted to mention that the Major League Baseball draft is about a month and a half away, 6 weeks out. We're going to start to address this more and more on BLB as we get closer because the Nats have the number one overall pick. It's going to be a really odd year at the top of the board. It wouldn't quite be the Nats' luck if this wasn't the case, but there is not an elite college bat. There's not even really a legitimate 1-1 option among college hitters this year, frankly, which would probably make the most sense for them. So the question becomes, what do you do? And at the top of the board right now, what I think this draft lends to is one of two options. At 1-1, you might just take the best consensus player, and that could be Ethan Holliday, the brother of Jackson of the Orioles and the son of Matt, former Cardinal and Rocky superstar, played with the Yankees and some other clubs. But it's interesting because, you know, he struggled in the summer leading into his high school baseball season to the point where there were some questions. Like, he had a lot to prove, and are we sure this is a 1-1 type guy, and should he go first overall? And he's had a much better run here in high school baseball this year to get himself viewed back into that number one overall pick, best player in the draft mode. And so I would think that that is the most likely outcome still, is that they take Ethan Holliday because you prefer to go bat over arm. And if you're starting with, let's take a bat here, then Holliday seems like the pretty obvious choice in terms of ceiling. But I think, and maybe it's not the Nats at 1-1, it's the teams around them. This is definitely a draft where there's going to be the opportunity for teams to use pool money with their second and their third picks. Like, you get a really safe, good player in the top five, maybe, whoever you like a lot, because they're all kind of similar, and maybe there's not superstar power, but potential or whatever. But you say, okay, we'll cut a deal with this guy because he'll take $300,000 less or something, and then you use that money to get a really good high school player a little bit later in the class. I think you're going to see more of that because it's just a unique top of the board. But if it's not Holliday, I think the play is maybe one of these college arms for the Nationals. There are three lefties that have really separated themselves this year. Their names to start familiarizing yourself with, if you're not a nerd who's in on this stuff, is Cade Anderson, who pitches at LSU, who just pitched in the regional this weekend and struck out 11 over 7 innings scoreless with 2 walks. Liam Doyle, who pitches at Tennessee, went 6 2/3, 1-run innings with 3 walks and 11 strikeouts this weekend. And then Jamie Arnold, who was at Florida State and went 7 innings and punched out 13 and walked a couple. Arnold of the Seminoles is probably the safest, I would say. He's a multi-year performer. He's been really, really good for 2 years. I would say he's the top guy. He's probably separated himself a little bit of these three. He's a lefty. It's not over the top. It's like a little bit lower slot. Fastball's awesome. Gets a ton of strikeouts on a huge sweeper of a slider. But he throws fastball top of the zone, kind of that Doolittle thing where with the spin rate and pitching up high in the zone, it's already a really, really good pitch, and he's a lefty throwing 96. But, you know, it even plays up from that. So he's interesting to me. Liam Doyle of Tennessee has some wipeout stuff, but there's, I would say, more questions about his delivery. It's a little bit funkier, maybe slightly more risk that he ends up being in the bullpen. Not to say that that's the expectation, but like, if you told me one of those three guys did, I would probably bet on Doyle. But like, he is filth and probably has the best fastball in the whole country, certainly of these three guys. Lots of swings and misses on that pitch. And he's pitched on three different programs over 3 years, and he just keeps getting better and better. And then lastly, Anderson from LSU, you know, he is really interesting because I think he might have the highest ceiling of the three in that he's kind of come on more and more as this year's gone along. So to me, it's those four guys in the conversation right now. The other name I would throw into the mix, although I want to get your thoughts on this, is a prep righty named Seth Hernandez. And I've talked to these guys on my prospect show here over the last month. Mostly all of them. I've talked to you know, Hernandez very recently, and I got to say, I was smitten. Like, he is, for an 18-year-old high schooler, I mean, you would think this guy's a five-year big leaguer, though, the way he interviews. But there's never been a high school right-hander that's gone 1-1. And you want to talk about rules, Toby? I basically, with Sharpie, have a thing against that. Like, I would just never do it. But if there's ever a year where it would not be crazy, it would be crazy. Like, I would not do it. But where I wouldn't be shocked, I guess, this year more than others, that, again, there's never been a high school right-hander that's gone first overall. Think about that. Not one time, ever. And I don't know that he is the guy to break that trend. I certainly think he's one of the most polished high school arms in years, probably in a couple of decades maybe. But, like, that is the list. So I just want to get your thoughts on that. To me, it's Holiday or it's one of the college arms, but it seems like you're almost getting cute not to take Ethan Holiday, who's been a consensus guy for a while here.
Yeah, for me, it's kind of Holiday or bust. I hate that it's got to that point, but, you know, that's the privilege of having the first pick and having a guy that, like you said, it's kind of been consensus for a while. And, you know, maybe he's had some disappointing stuff, but to me, you know, anybody that's worried about Holiday, remember, Jackson wasn't viewed as the consensus number one guy. He gets drafted. When he was called up, he was the number one prospect in baseball, and the Orioles were able to develop him. And he struggled to start, but because the Orioles are so bad, Grant, no one pays attention, but he's been one of the best second basemen in the bigs over the last month or so. Like, he's been really, really good. And I saw that, you know, Matt Holliday's dad and Ethan were in Baltimore. He had a leadoff jack the other day against the White Sox. But I think Ethan, to me, has a higher ceiling than what Jackson does. Jackson, to me, is someone that can be a helpful big leaguer, but I don't know that he's ever a dominant superstar. You know, he kind of, when we talk about it again, it's kind of like Dylan Cruz versus James Wood. Both are really, really good. One of them is a all-star caliber. One of them is an MVP caliber. I think that's similar to Jackson and Ethan. To me, Jackson's the Dylan Cruz type. Ethan potentially could be the James Wood type. Bigger, stronger, has, he's going to play a corner infield spot more than likely. I don't think he could play short. He's going to play third. Maybe you convert him to a first baseman down the line or something like that. But big power, lefty. I just think when you look at their development of high school bats, and we've talked about this at times with, you know, some trepidation, I think you can look at Elijah Green, obviously, and see that there's a struggle there, but that was kind of understood when you drafted him, and you were going to have to go a long ways with him to get him to be the prospect that you wanted him to be, versus Brady House. Looks like he's about to make the bigs and be an impactful player. He's someone that came out of high school that they were able to develop as a first rounder. And I think when you look at Ethan Holiday, he comes baked in with a guy that has the Holiday pedigree. And sometimes I don't know how much you want to make of that, but I also don't think it's surprising that when you hear about Jackson Holiday and when he's really taken off, it was his dad called down and said, hey, make this little tweak. And all of a sudden, he started hitting the ball and been one of the best second basemen in the bigs. Like, you come with a built-in hitting coach that understands your guy more than anyone else because he's been with him his entire life. And it's a all-time great Matt Holiday. So, to me, I can't – if this team were picking fourth, this team were picking fifth, I think I'd be a little bit more open to the idea of cutting a deal at your pick and then maybe using it later, because look at what happened last year where maybe they could have gone with a better talent that they liked with the 10th pick, but they ultimately went with Seaver King so they could spend that money to get Luke Dickerson in the second round, and that's looking like it's going to work out right now. Seaver King maybe hasn't been as good as they wanted, but Luke Dickerson's looks every bit as good as you could want. I can't do that at 1-1, Grant. I can't. Not when there's a guy like an Ethan Holiday that can help me out. Maybe I'll be proven wrong there. But to me, you know, your principle generally has been bad over arm. I'm curious why, you know, when Ethan Holiday is there, why is it so different this time? Do you just not believe in Ethan Holiday as much?
No. Look, I'm not saying I wouldn't take Ethan Holiday. I'm not ready to go hard in the paint yet. I mean, for me, I don't get to see these guys enough, right? It's not like the minors now where you can watch all their games on TV. The high schoolers, I mean, the college pitchers. Honestly, I'm just more familiar. I watch these guys, you know, all the time. I haven't seen an Ethan Holiday at bat. I've seen him in a home run derby. I've actually seen him swing in person, you know, because I go to some of these events and show, you know, whatever I can. But what I'm saying is I'm just – you know, I'm not there yet. I don't think the Nats know right now who they're going to take, if we're being honest, like 6 weeks out. I don't know how they could. So maybe I'll get there with Ethan Holliday. You know, there was some swing and miss and some questions just about performance, like I said, at the start of the high school baseball season. And it's just been hard to get information on the high school baseball season and his in general. Like, you just don't see the numbers coming out. And when I start to see some of those numbers, I've got to base it on that without being able to use the eyes. And I don't mean like batting average or, you know, home runs or something like that. I mean, like, you know, some of the data that comes along late in terms of swings and misses and a lot of the stuff that said Elijah Green was going to be a concern potentially.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
That guy, like, wait, this guy struck out 8 times in a series at IMG Academy. Like, that doesn't happen in high school for a top 5 pick. So like some of the batted ball data and stuff I want to see. But like, look, right now, this moment, if I'm on the clock at 1-1, I would probably take him. The other thing, though, and this, you know, goes back to the Rosenthal piece, I guess, a little bit, is there. Well, how do I say this correctly? When is the last time they've drafted and developed and crushed it with a high school bat? It has been a while. Now,
you're Brady hoping House, it's Brady House, yes.
Yeah, Brady House could be the guy, and he's in a pretty good place at AAA right now. And I think some of it is like, it could be the groceries more than the cooking. I don't know. Like, if they drafted James Wood out of high school at pick 55 out of IMG, is James Wood James Wood? Maybe the answer is yes, because he's just that special. And I'm not saying that, you know, they haven't made adjustments or they're not doing it better. But I like the idea of someone who's closer, and safer is the wrong word if we're talking about a potential like number two type starter. But someone who might help you in a year. There's also matching up timelines here. If Holliday is the guy, if he's really, really good, none of this stuff matters. So that's why I'm still open to that possibility. But like, Mackenzie Gore's got a couple of years left after this. You know what I mean? CJ Abrams, I think, has, what, 3 years left after this season? So if we're not talking extensions here, the window's got to be starting next year for me to try to make the playoffs. And if that's the case, if I drafted Jamie Arnold, let's say, then I think he's in the rotation maybe by the end of next, there's a chance he's debuting at the end of next year. And him and Sakura are in the rotation at the start of 27, you know, when you've got Gore still for that final year. And, like, that's a pretty nasty situation. So I just think a lot goes into it in terms of the timeline and some information we don't have yet. But yes, in a vacuum, normally, really high ceiling, potential star high schooler, if we think he could be a 30 home run bat, I'd probably jump on him over the college arm.
You know, over the years, I've seen it all. So now I'm sharing it all. Join me for Unfiltered Talks with the names you love on my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich. Follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's take us home, Toby. Cubs in town. Cubs, by the way, how about this offense? I mean, they have been a juggernaut this season. This is as good a team as there's been in the National League, 15 over 500, 37 wins, tied with the Mets for the most in the senior circuit, and they just rake. This should be a fun test at Nats Park.
Yeah, it should be a good one. On Tuesday, you'll get Cade Horton on the hill for the Cubs, one of the top prospects in baseball, right-handed arm against Trevor Williams, the former Cub. Wednesday should be a fun one. Pair of lefties on the hill. Matthew Boyd kind of resurrecting his career, got a 3.08 ERA. He takes the hill for the Cubbies. Mackenzie Gore goes for the Nats. Then Thursday, you got Colin Ray against Jake Irvin. So should be a good series for the Nationals. They've proven they can beat these top teams. Remember, earlier this year, they took 2 of 3 against the Dodgers. So, you know, this is a team that can compete against these teams. These are always fun because it's almost like a measuring stick. They're never going to say that. They don't really care, but I think for fans, it shows whether you can hang with the big boys or not. The Cubbies come in, one of the better teams in baseball. I'm excited to see this. How would you describe it? This guy that's kind of, as much as we're talking about James Wood and guys kind of coming onto the scene, how about PCA? Pete Crow Armstrong, just rolling onto the scene this year. A guy that was just supposed to be a defensive guy, and he is spectacular in center field. Probably the best defensive center fielder in baseball right now. Actually, probably not probably. He is the best defensive center fielder in baseball right now, but he's been crushing the ball. So I'm excited to see what he looks like in person, just see him. He's going to be special to watch in center, but at the plate,
where
he's been a demon
as well. Where
has this
power come from?
I have no idea.
What on earth? I mean, I love this kid. He's been one of my guys. I'm just a fan of like uber athletes who cover a lot of ground in center. But this to me was going to be a doubles machine, 15-18 home run. Like he's James Wood. He's got 15 jacks right now.
I know. You were thinking with Pete Crow Armstrong that this was going to be a guy that his defense would keep him in the lineup, but he was going to bat like 7, 8, 9 for most of his career and be helpful as a speed guy on the bases. And now he's turned into Barry Bonds at the plate and Andrew Jones in center field. it's incredible to see what he's been able to do. So I'm excited to see what he does this series. May or may not have something cooked up, a little meme ready to go, but I need CJ to get it going in the series, and I'll maybe tweet that out later. We'll save that for another time. But yeah, excited to see the Cubbies come into town. Good measuring stick for the Nats.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. All right, big thanks to producer Darius Dameron for making everything sound smooth. For Toby Altizer, I'm Grant Paulson. Remember to subscribe to the pod, rate the pod, review the pod, do all of that audio stuff wherever you get your podcast so that we can keep growing this sucker. Thanks for listening to a long episode 184 of Bustin' Loose Baseball. We're back at it after the Cubs series at Nats Park.